Welcome to Pub Natter, where we record each episode in a different pub in Rutland, the smallest county in England. In each episode, your hosts, Tim and Justin, give a voice to the landlords and landladies and a special guest with a specific area of interest or expertise. We hope you enjoy our chats and it encourages you to go and explore our little county and all it has to offer. Like the motto says, there is much in little. So we're in the grain store in Oakham, in Rutland, with the co-owner, Peter Atkinson. And we're going to talk about everything related to the pub, the microbrewery. So first of all, Peter, tell us a little bit about like where you're from originally and what brought you here.
Originally? Crikey, that's a long time ago. originally I'm from Buckinghamshire.
Oh.
So I hail from the Amersham area.
Oh, right, yeah. I know it.
And I sort of fell into this industry when I was about 6-7 years old. And my parents moved us to the Channel Islands. So they bought a hotel in Guernsey. And I sort of never really got away from the hospitality industry ever since.
So were you ever a publican?
I am technically the publican here as well. So I'm the DPS on site here.
What does that mean, DPS?
So I'm the premises supervisor. I hold the license here.
All right. Okay.
And have done for nearly 20 years now.
So how do you get from the Channel Islands to Oakham?
Yeah,
via plane or boat.
Mostly swimming, I think. We left after 5 years. I don't know whether you know anything about the Channel Islands, but unless you're a naturalised Channel Islander, you can't stay for more than 5 years, unless you're teaching, in which case you can stay for 10 years. So after 5 years, they gave up the hotel, and we moved to London, actually. Spent a year in London.
Whereabouts?
I say London. It was Hampstead. It's not really London, is it? You can get to Hampstead quicker from here than you can from the centre of London. And then we moved to Rutland. So I moved here in 1981.
So with your folks?
Yeah. My parents bought a village shop and post office. And, we've been here ever since.
In which village?
Whissendine.
Are they still there?
No, they live in Belton now. Oddly enough, right. I moved back to Whissendine about 5 years ago, so I've not right. really fallen far from the tree.
No.
In fact, I live about 200 yards from the house I grew up in.
Wow. Is Whissendine in Rutland, or is it just outside?
No, it's in Rutland, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was Leicestershire.
So, yeah, it's on our radar for a podcast.
Cracking pub there.
Well, yeah. If they've got a magician,
yeah.
Why have we not been already?
Absolutely. He's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
I am like an 8-year-old when I meet a magician. I'm just absolutely fascinated by it.
You'll love him. He does lots of tricks for 8-year-olds.
Oh, brill. So how did you find your way to the grain store? How did that happen?
So I sort of came out of university and just started working in a local hostelry round here.
So just rewind, which university and what were you studying?
I studied business finance and management at Portsmouth.
Oh, right.
Another island. I lived on the Isle of Wight and commuted on the ferry every day over to Portsmouth.
Oh, wow.
Can't get away from islands. You say, oh, wow, but there's a grim place in the winter.
Living there, you must have taken the average age down about 10 years.
And the rest, yeah. Well, funnily enough, I lived in my nan's bungalow and she spent most of the year travelling around the world, enjoying retirement, and I had free reign of her bungalow and her car.
Nice.
But I used to commute over on the Isle of Wight ferry every day on my push bike, which sounds great until you get to 8 o'clock at night and the ferry stops. Yeah. And you're in Portsmouth and your bed's on the Isle of Wight. So there was many a night spent in hedges and on people's sofas when I had a perfectly good bungalow 4 miles away.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get there. And after that, we sort of came back here, started working just as a waiter to earn a bit of extra money in the Noel Arms at Whitwell when it was the Noel Arms.
Have you been back there recently?
No, I'm not a big believer in revisiting the past.
It's under new ownership at the moment.
It is, yeah. I was oddly enough, chatting with Karen today. So getting away from the pub, obviously they buy a little bit of beer from us from the brewery sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I was having a chat with her a couple of hours ago. So I started working there, ended up as a restaurant manager there, left that, did a bit of experience in larger hotels in cities, doing a bit of banqueting. Came back and started doing a bit of chefing, doing the rounds in the sort of hospitality industry. It's great to get experience doing lots of other things as well as just working behind bars. You know, it's good to see the other side of the wall, see what's going on in the kitchen. And then ended up working for the original founder of this place, Tony, and Will, his son, when they owned the old plant, Brawlston. So I started working there, just doing a bit of chefing, trying to get them through a Christmas period coming down to manage this place, and that was 20 years ago next year.
So they owned the Plough and they had the brewery here?
Yeah. Yeah. So
was that Ruddles then?
No, so Ruddles closed. When did Ruddles close?
Long before.
I can tell you it was probably somewhere around 98, 99, because I moved here in 97 and it was still open, but very quickly it closed and became a housing estate.
Okay, so we started off in 94. So Tony must have left. I think he left when they basically stopped producing beer.
Or maybe the brewery was still there, but they weren't producing them when I moved here.
They'd moved production down to Moreland, place where they had brewed Old Speckled Hen. And Tony decided to go round the world hop buying, had a little office just up the road, kept driving past here every day and decided to turn it into a brewery, and that was 93, 94. So they had the bar here, which actually opened before the brewery. And then eventually they had the old Plough at Braunston and...
they had the Kingfisher, didn't they?
Had the Kingfisher, we owned that for a while. We love pubs on really dodgy corners. Yeah. There's two bad ones. Getting in and out of the car park, you took your life in your hands in both of those places. And for a while we had one of the pubs in Greetham as well. But we didn't have that for very long. So.
The Plough?
The Plough, yeah. Yeah. Nice little pub still there, thankfully. Yeah. And so, I joined the business. It'll be 20 years this year. Just to get them through Christmas down there as a chef and then with a view to coming up here to take over managing this place. And I've been here ever since.
Wow. Yeah. So how did you get into owning it, becoming a co-owner?
So, 10, nearly 11 years ago now, Tony decided to retire. Tony Davis decided that he'd retire. And his son and I, Will, basically bought him out. Management buyout, if you like. And we decided we'd take it on, very much paralleling how he started the business. So there was himself and a gentleman called Mike Davies, who was a fabrication engineer and built all the brewery upstairs. And he sort of, very similarly, he was Tony's business partner. He retired. Then Tony retired, and then myself and Will have taken over. So it's sort of still in the family, and I'm the hanger-on a la Mike Davies, as it were.
Sure. So are you involved in the formulation of the beers?
No. In fact...
So whose responsibility is that?
Tony still does that. So he lives just around the corner. He works. He's sort of on tap to be our consultant and sort of technical help, and if we want to produce more beers, he generally speaking will say to him, we want it to look like this, taste like this, he'll come up with a grist for it and we'll brew it. So he's still sort of there in the background. I think he always will be.
So for those that don't know, grist?
Grist is basically just the recipe. So it's the mixture of the four things that go to create beer, essentially, which is yeast, water, hops and malted barley, and that forms your recipe or your grist.
So we were learning all about that from Dean Baker at Baker's Dozen Brewery last week, and it was fascinating. You know, I didn't realise you could tinker with the water, but obviously that's a major thing in actually tinkering with the water to make it.
Oh, completely. Yeah. So those four things you can tinker with infinitely and come up with infinite different sorts of beers, which is why there are so many brews and so many styles and different types of beer that are all unique. Because you've only got to take half a kilo of malt out of an entire brew and you've got a completely different beer, effectively.
Sure.
And the yeast imparts, you know, different yeasts impart different flavours, different waters impart different flavours, even different equipment imparts different flavours.
Sure.
So it's fascinating science.
It is. So when you first started, you had two beers, 1050 and Cooking. That's correct.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and we used to sell three because we used to then blend those two together to come up with a third, which was quite common back then.
Right.
And that was Triple B in its sort of infancy. So we had a portfolio of three beers, but only brewed two.
So if I had a pint of Cooking as it used to be, would it taste the same as this, or has it been tinkered with?
It's more or less the same.
Is it?
Things have changed a little bit. For instance, we don't use a great deal of Maris Otter malt anymore. Originally, it was all Maris Otter. Maris Otter is now incredibly expensive as a product, so we put it in to say we use it, but essentially it's all pale ale malt. But the recipe is almost identical to it was 20 years ago.
So,
sorry, 30 years ago.
So the building itself, what was it before it was...
Oh, it's had lots of uses, this place. So we're called the Grain Store Brewery because at one point it was the town grain store. So the bit where we are now... the doors behind me here that now lead out into our cellar and kitchen used to be an external door, and the cellar, which is 6 foot further down, was actually a railway siding, and the same one, the doors that lead through to the toilets, the other side of the bar, they just used to lead out onto a platform. Trains would roll up, the grain would be loaded on, and off they would go. Somewhere in here, on the back of one of those pictures, many, many certificates on the wall, is actually a picture of trains coming into the railway siding beside the building. We really ought to put it on display because it's a great picture. So it was actually a town grain store. It was the town post office sorting office for a while. So they used to have all the posts were sorted. It used to go on the mail trains, again, straight out through the door here. In fact, when we turned up here 30 years ago, I don't think there's any down this end, but down the other end of the bar, there's actually still the original lead flashing on the floor.
Sure, yeah.
And this was all completely whitewashed.
So there's bars on the windows over there. I presume that was related to the post office.
Yeah, thing. That was original security features.
Yeah.
And because we're in a...
It's to make the original locals feel at home.
Yeah. It's not quite that bad. I'd like to think the Cleo tellers clamouring to get in, not out. but there we go. Yeah, it's a great building. This it's not ideal for brewing in by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a wonderful building.
I was trying to think how you would describe it to a listener. I guess it's your typical spit and sawdust pub, isn't it?
And do you know what? There's few words we use to describe the place. Spit and sawdust is absolutely nail hammered. Quirky, very quirky, but it's basically a red brick building, all held up with some massive industrial pillars and lots of woodwork.
Yeah, is the ceiling, was that put in when it was turned into the pub brewery?
No, that's been there.
Because those joists look relatively modern.
I don't think they certainly were here before we turned up. I couldn't tell you much beyond that, but they've certainly been here a good 30 years. The metalwork, actually, on the floor above us, there's a plaque on the pillars that tells you when it was installed. And all the pillars were built in a foundry in Leicester.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is mid-19th century, 1850, 1860, something like that.
Just a little bit later than that. It's about 1890, I think.
Yeah, not a bad guess.
Well, as you know, I
a bit of history there as well.
I love it here. I think it's great. And we're lucky to have this as our local, that we can stagger to and from.
Do you know, I fell in love with it before I worked here. I used to have a little town, a house in town, and I would walk the dog across town, sit at the bar, get abused by Linda, drink a pint of Panther, spend all afternoon here. She'd refuse to give me credit. And I'd walk my dog home. And I fell in love with the place, and I've been here ever since. I think it's a great building.
I used to bring my dog over when the kids were young, and to give my wife a couple of hours on her own on a Sunday afternoon. Me and the kids would take the dog for a walk, and this is where we'd end up.
This is your destination.
There's lots of dogs don't go very far. They all tend to end up in here. But there's plenty in here tonight, as you can see.
Unfortunately, the dog got a bit old and a bit crotchety, and the last time I brought him here, he's gone now, but the last time I brought him here, he wandered up to somebody and peed up the back of the head.
I guess...
complete stranger.
I guess that's one of the problems with having quite an industrial building with wooden floors and lots of pillars everywhere. Dogs tend to find themselves quite at home in here.
Yeah.
But it has got a great atmosphere, and it attracts all sorts as well, doesn't it? You always get a mix of people coming in.
I've never quite managed to pigeonhole us into anything. We've tried very hard to do lots of different things over the last 30 years, particularly the last 10 years. But ultimately, we're a bit of everything to everybody. And generally speaking, pubs don't work very well when they're like that. Generally speaking, you have to have a USP. Ours is the fact that there's a brewery upstairs, I guess.
Yeah.
But the actual building itself, if you walked 2 miles down the road and said to someone, grain store, what's the first thing that comes into your head? 90% of them, 95% of them will say, oh, it's a pub. It isn't actually a pub, it's a brewery tap, but it is a pub too. And we get all sorts. We get people from 18 to 85.
Sure. Having the station next door is quite handy as well.
Yeah, it does and it doesn't work. It was nice when the car park was free, but now they started charging. It's customers are finding it hard to find places to park, but that's the modern world, isn't it?
I was here once a few years ago, and just on a Saturday lunchtime, I walked in and there were about 25 Tamworth Town supporters all in their Tamworth Town shirts, and apparently whenever they've got a match east of here, it's a thing. They get up early and they stop at Oakham, come into the grain store, have a few beers, and then get on the train and go off to Stamford or Bourne or wherever it is there.
It is amazing. I'd been here for 6 years when suddenly I came downstairs and found my uncle sat in the bar. And he lives in Leeds. Doesn't drive. And I had no idea he was here. Walked down, a bit surprised, said hello. He said, I've been coming here every Monday for the last 10 years. Because I come on down on the train from Leeds, I change at Leicester, I come over here, I stop, I have a couple of beers, then go home. And he never said a word. He'd been doing it every Monday for 6 years. And because I didn't work Mondays, I didn't even know he was here. That sort of thing's quite common, you know. People rock up, get off the train.
Yeah,
it's really quite handy when you have things like Peterborough Beer Festival, because everybody that comes on the train to that stops here first. And then on the way back from Peterborough, they'll stop here again. And it's very, very handy for that sort of thing.
I mean, it's what I call a proper pub as well. I think you've had this fruit machine from time to time, comes and goes. Never had a jukebox that I can recall.
No.
Had a bar billiards table briefly.
We still own that. That's in our warehouse currently.
Yeah. But it's a pub where you come to have a drink, a bite to eat, a chat.
I have a very, very simple rule of what I think a pub is. And forgive me, but people like ubiquitous chain pubs. I don't really regard them as pubs. I think a pub is somewhere, and I judge a pub by the fact that I walk in, and if there are stalls at the bar, for me that's a pub, because they obviously want you to sit there, they want you to interact with the staff, they want you to feel comfortable and just sit and chat.
I know.
That,
I
for agree. Me, is a pub.
There's nothing worse than going into an establishment and you wanting to go and sit at the bar and then being taken to a seat.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you've only got to look down here and there's plenty of people sat at the bar chatting away with the bar staff. For me, that is a pub. Anything beyond that isn't really a pub. It's a restaurant. It's a food service place that has a bar. And I judge every pub I walk into as to whether or not there's a stall at the bar.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you do some good food as well. We just had a couple of burgers.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I'm mega impressed.
Thank you. I can feel my pension fund swelling. That's
Well, again, I mean, I've been coming here for nearly 30 years now, but it's only, what, the last 8, 10 years you've really
certainly
there was looks. You dipped your toe in the water with some pork pies and a few sort of bar snacks, didn't you?
Nineteen years ago when I came here, the kitchen was basically a cupboard. I mean, it basically still is, but it was a smaller cupboard. And it was an office that had been converted, and we basically just did a few meals at lunchtimes. We didn't do anything in the evening at all. Pork pies, you know, something that the bar staff could serve up rather than a chef. And we served ploughmans and cobs and that kind of thing. Cobs, is that a word? Rolls?
It depends on what part of the country you're from.
A bit of heritage. How long you've been here.
That's a different conversation, isn't it? And we used to do that at lunchtimes, and we didn't serve anything in the evenings at all. And we sort of slowly changed that. And then 10, 11 years ago when Will and I took over, it was quite obvious that pubs very rarely survive as drinking establishments anymore. And so we had to look a little bit more seriously at doing food, but we didn't want to do something that is not in keeping with the building. There's no carpet, it's wooden boards, it's very industrial to a certain degree. And so we had to keep it quite rustic. So it is typical ham, egg and chips, pies, burgers.
Well, I don't know. You've got.
But we try and make it all ourselves.
A little bit more at market now.
Yeah, the lamb's very good.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. So you have to have the occasional nice dish on the menu. I say nice. I mean, we try and make everything ourselves. So the pies are all homemade. And, you know, if we do things like sausage and mash, local Grasmere Farm, they make sausages with our beer in. So we'll use that in the dish. And we just try and do things nicely, but you get a good plate of food, and that's very in keeping with the atmosphere of the place.
Yeah.
It's never going to be a fine dining restaurant, and nor do we want it to ever be a fine dining restaurant.
My favourite thing here is the full English breakfast. Yeah. I think you do a really good breakfast, and it's good value.
We started that. There was a Rugby World Cup that was being held in Japan. And it was all the games were on at 5 o'clock in the morning. And we started serving breakfast for people to come and watch the rugby. And we've never stopped. So every Saturday and Sunday, we serve breakfast. It's very difficult during the week because it's much more of a brewery Monday to Friday in the mornings. But the weekend, the brewery doesn't work. So we can serve breakfast. And we sort of set it up originally to try and compete with the sort of greasy spoon, try and attract custom of that. Not that level, but at that sort of
ilk.
Of that sort of, come in, have a good plate of food, good value, enjoy it, have a pint with it if you want, and go away full.
So what's the rules around that? Can you serve beer any time of the day or night if you choose to? Or
you can if you've applied to. So licensing laws. Do you remember all that hoo-ha a few years ago when the licensing laws were changed to say you could open and trade 24 hours if you want? You know, nobody around here is ever going to trade 24 hours. It's just not worth it. But we changed our opening hours. We took the opportunity to change the licensing hours here so that they run from 8 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the morning, the following morning, should we want to. Obviously, we don't. Most nights we shut at 10, 10.30, 11 o'clock. When we have our festivals, that kind of thing, we can stay open until 2 if we want. Mm-hmm. And we can serve beer from 9 o'clock in the morning if we want.
Yep.
Mostly we open at midday, but Saturday and Sunday we open at 9 o'clock. And if someone wants a pint, they're more than welcome.
Well, I come to the Armed Forces breakfast clubs here, and I've witnessed people starting quite early.
Do you know, it's we up until COVID hit, we used to have this chap that would come in every Sunday morning. And before his breakfast, he'd have 3 pints of Guinness. I didn't know whether to bow down in awe or whether to run away, because he's, very interesting. I mean, who nails 3 pints of Guinness at 9 o'clock in the morning before a full
evening? Oh, gosh.
That's some serious drinking, that, isn't it? It's, I was a bit offended it was Guinness, but there you go. You can't have everything.
I know somebody that comes here for your Guinness, and he... He's a connoisseur of Guinness, and he said it's one of the best establishments in the area. So
we sell a lot of Guinness, especially over the last couple of years. Tastes have changed. You know, 10 years ago, all we did was sell Carling, and now we hardly sell any of the stuff. And Guinness is a really big seller. And actually, it is quite around the whole area around here. It's quite a local. I would say local delicacy. That's the wrong phrase. It's It's the drink of Rutland almost. It's, yeah. Yeah, it's
a lot of old people around here though, so.
I'm not saying a word. you're not gonna catch me with that. It's terrible.
So how many real ales have you got on at any one time?
So at any one time we have six minimum. Usually there's six or seven. We used to have about eight on, but I think things have changed a little bit. Drinking habits have changed a bit over the last 5-6 years particularly, so we have two banks of hand pulls and a sort of inverted commas north end and south end, so there's always the original idea was to have five beers on through both ends, have the same beer on both ends, and they have different spouts on, so you'd have a southern serving and a northern serving style, and you could try both. You can try the beer in both the north and south sort of style of serving it. So a southern style served beer doesn't have a sparkler on it, has no head, it's quite flat, whereas in the north they like a creamy head.
Oh. Do you have that for cooking?
Yeah, you can have a choice, yeah.
Because when I was here, I hate to say this to our listeners, when I was here yesterday...
I've never seen you before in my life, I don't know.
It's a picture. It had a creamier head on it. I'm talking about cooking.
Yep.
And this hasn't, so I'm now understanding why.
They've taken it off a different pump, or they haven't put a sparkler on it.
So you can ask
yeah,
for
absolutely.
Which particular one you want?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
As a rule of thumb, we put sparklers on because it just looks nicer, it's a better presentation, but it does change the flavour of the beer. So
it makes it smoother, doesn't it?
It makes it smoother. It draws some of the bitterness in the pint into the head, so you get a much creamier head, but you lose the bitterness in the pint itself. So in many ways, it's sort of changing the way the beer is meant to be. But taste changing. People like a smoother pint. Some people like, you know, plenty of people like it without head at all. Some people like it with a nice mm-hmm. thick head, so... personal choice, and you can have whichever you prefer.
I think I prefer it like that,
yeah.
Without a thick, creamy head.
Well, you yeah. get a much more bitter pint.
Yeah.
You know, beer's called bitter for a reason. It's bitter. And when you put a sparkler on it, say it draws some yeah. of that bitterness into the head, which you sort of then lose amongst the cream flavours of it. So you get a smoother beer overall. But it's a personal taste.
So what's the best seller?
Bestseller's 1050. That's our 5% premium beer.
Cool. That's the kind of what you call it, London pride of the grain store, is it?
Oh, I wouldn't say it was a London pride. It's our version of Ruddles County,
right?
As it yeah. used to be back in the day. It's
okay.
obviously a very different beer now, Ruddles County. But
yeah.
Ruddles County, when it was brewed here, is basically what 1050 is. It's a slightly better beer, we think, or Tony thinks, than Ruddles County, but that, again, that's a personal choice, isn't it? But yeah, it's a recreation essentially of 1050 of Ruddles County.
I quite like to drink these sorts of beers, like cooking 1050 in the winter. In the summer, I like lighter ales,
yeah.
like your Osprey.
Yeah,
I think that's really nice.
That's a very common thing these days. Yeah. You know, people go for paler beers. During the summer, yeah. dark ones in the winter. I suppose that's quite traditional, really.
What's your favourite?
Out of all the things we brew, it's a beer called Red Kite, which is, as the name suggests, a sort of red-coloured beer. It's only 3.8. We rarely have it on the bar here. We brew it year-round and sell lots of it to other pubs.
Oh, okay.
But we very rarely put it on the bar here because it clashes with cooking in terms of its sort of colour and ABV. We tried to have a broad range on the bar of different colours and different ABVs. So we rarely sell it on the bar, but it's a sort of a recreation of an old 1960s recipe using a mild ale malt. And it tends to be a little bit sweeter than the cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So is how much of your business is selling out to externals and how much is brewing and serving here?
So, probably about a tenth of everything we produce we serve here.
Oh, really?
So 90% is sold away from the.
And how far do you? How far away from here can you get a grain store beer?
We deliver direct to pubs within about a 40-mile radius of here, but nationwide you can get it through some of the aforementioned ubiquitous chain pubs.
Oh, really?
So we have a. We have a contract with one particular Well, let's be about the bush. We have a contract with Wetherspoons. and 6 months of the year, they take a brew.
That's all the Remainers.
Yeah. That's killed everybody off this. Sorry about that. If anyone's still listening, then...
I'll still come.
We... Six months of the year, they take a brew a week from us, which we deliver to a distribution place in Burton-on-Trent, and then they distribute it nationwide. And then, so they sort of do the donkey work for us, delivering it around the country.
Do you ever quality control it? I mean, do you have any idea of how well it's kept, how well it's served? If somebody's in Leeds or Bradford or somewhere and has a pint of 10.50, are they going to have the same experience as they would have here?
The short answer is both yes and no. we do have a certain amount of quality control within the people we direct deliver to, because obviously we're going there mostly week in, week out, or every other week. And so you get a lot of feedback from them. Most of us will only go and drink in pubs that we supply beer to, so you get a good feel of how well it's travelled. But beyond our borders, as it were, you have very little control. I was down in Brighton and went into a Wetherspoons and had a pint of our gold down there just on the off chance my wife was down there sailing. I went in, found it was on the bar, had a pint, and it was dreadful. I gave them my business card and said, do you mind if I go and have a look at it in the cellar? And it was 10 weeks old, and we supply it out of here with a 6 week shelf life. And you sort of you can't, to a certain degree, once it leaves the brewery and you've done all of your checks and balances and quality control within the premises, it's incredibly difficult to then control what happens at the other end. You know, they used to say in the industry that it's 50% the brewery and 50% the landlord to get you a decent pint, and that's probably about right. We're confident it leaves here in good nick. What happens beyond our own four walls, you're relying on other people to look after it properly.
And I suppose it's such a small proportion of what you do. It's not going to somebody having a bad pint in Brighton isn't going to actually damage the brand.
Be amazed.
Really?
Oh yes. You get emails on a weekly basis from people. Usually, thankfully, touch wood, saying, oh, I had a pint of your 10.50, I was in Sunderland, it was great, it was lovely, where can I buy it locally? And you know, the short response is wherever you just bought it from, because I've got no way of selling beer in Sunderland other than via that chain pub. But you get the occasional, had a pint of your beer, it tasted like vinegar, email conversation.
And the answer is, if you're ever in Rutland, pop in and I'll give you a proper one.
That's exactly the answer. You know, just come to any pub in Rutland and try it, and you'll probably find it's not bad at all. Thankfully, touch wood, with my sort of brewery hat on instead of pub hat on, most of the pubs around here look after beer really well. And you tend to get a good pint in most places you go. So, you know, no problem pointing people in the right direction if they want a pint of our beer. It's nice and easy.
That's right.
So if you decide, I mean, because even in the time I've been coming here, the range of beers is expanded. Even the last 4 or 5 years, I'd say, the number of different beers seems to have expanded quite a lot. When you decide we're going to have a new product, what's the process? Do you wake up with a flash of inspiration or...?
sometimes. Very rarely. So it tends to be about hard numbers, really, if I'm really honest. We'll identify something, the Rugby World Cup, let's say the Rugby World Cup's on, let's brew a beer for the Rugby World Cup, because it's a four-week competition. We've got lots of opportunity to sell beer. If it sells well in week one, the landlords will buy another one for week two, week three, week four. So that sort of starts your mind thinking. We'll decide how that fits into our range through the year. So what time of year it is. Do we want a pale one if it's in the summer? Do we want a darker one if it's in the winter? And we'll come up with an idea of what we want it to look like, taste like. We'll chuck those ideas at Tony to come up with the grist, to come up with the recipe. He'll throw the recipe back at us. We'll brew it. And then the hard work really starts, and that's coming up with a name. It's like honestly, it's like giving birth. It's so painful. Coming up with a name for a beer is the hardest thing we do, year in, year out.
It's Who was the horrible. Genius that came up with metatarsals during the Football World Cup?
So that was Will. He came up with that. Yeah, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah. So there's lots of stuff that you just, as time goes on and you sort of run out of the inspirational moments, it becomes like pulling teeth. And we'll run it through everybody in the brewery. Have you got an idea? What can you call it? People come up with all sorts of rubbish.
So when Prince Charles visited, King Charles as he is now, did you know he was coming before you brewed the beer?
Oh yeah, yeah. They turned up a month in advance for that one. The police come along and they. My wife's an ex-copper, so I was sort of. A little bit of background, they literally turn up and they check all your drains and take them all up and seal them all, make sure, because obviously, you know, back then the IRA was still a thing, and there was lots of security going on, and so we knew a month in advance before they were coming.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very tightly controlled that visit.
Do you still make that one?
No, that was just a one-off.
One-off.
Yeah, we'll never brew that again. So it was a beer called Rutland Welcome.
So from sort of inception to being available on the bar, is it days, weeks, months?
You'd like to think we plan these things, you know, months and months and months in advance, but mostly we're so busy that someone goes, Charles is being coronated, we ought to do a beer, quick. It tends to be about a month.
Yeah, that's
If we give ourselves a month, we've done well. But we've now sort of settled into a point where we've got our core range of about 7 or 8 beers. We've got 4 seasonals, and then we have 11 or 12 one-offs that we do through the year for specific events. We do a Wimbledon beer. We'll produce a honey beer in August. We'll do our Christmas beer. So we've settled into a pattern of probably about 20 beers through the year that we know we're going to brew.
Wow.
And then for other one-off events like the coronation.
We're planning succession.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's if you can get carried away with doing too many, you can get stuck into brewing just your core range. And you can fall into either trap. But people like, you know, lots of landlords are pump clip collectors. They just like to have a different beer.
Is there a lot of sort of capital investment in producing a new beer, or can you pretty much produce something for 6 months and then call it, or a month or 2 months and call it a day?
The way we brew, we're very traditional. So there's only 4 things in beer. You vary them about a bit and you come up with a different beer. It's a bit simplistic, but it's true. Most of those ingredients we already have on site. If we're going to brew something that's got a different style of hop in it, an American hop, a New Zealand hop, we can go out and buy quantities that we need, as opposed to, you know, sitting on a ton Zentner of the stuff. We can just buy 5 kilos of it because we're going to do it as a one-off beer. In terms of capital outlay, probably the most expensive thing is paying a designer to design your pump clip for you, and then getting those produced, because the beer itself, you know, if you hadn't brewed that, you'd have brewed something else, which would have cost about the same. It's all about the... It's all about the imagery, really. I'm not joking. Coming up with a name in a pump clip is just so arduous.
We could help you with that, couldn't we?
Sorry?
We could help you with that.
Yeah, we could.
Maybe you could run a competition.
Yeah, I'm sure one of our 4 listeners would be able to come up with something.
So what do you need? Do you need an idea or a name for something?
Generally speaking, if you've got a name, you can create a pump clip image around that name. So it's coming up with a name is the key thing.
Okay.
Sometimes that name fits the beer, sometimes it doesn't.
So if you're listening, send us an email.
Absolutely.
And we'll pass it on.
We ran a competition with Rutland Radio many years ago, around our beer festival, where we basically offered people the opportunity to name a beer. We would produce it, we'd come up with a pump clip for them and all that kind of stuff. And it was the biggest response they'd ever had to a competition. Wow. And all 12 entries were rubbish. I kid you not, they got 12 entries, the biggest response they'd ever had to a competition. But they were all dire. So in the end, we just made one up. Said John Doe made it, and we created our own pub clip. But you know, we're all ears. If people want to come up with ideas, happy to listen.
I was going to ask you, because I'm a lager drinker, not a bitter drinker.
No, I did notice. It's okay though.
But you, generally speaking, I drink the Purus, which is I like it because it's relatively low alcohol, but it tastes of something. It's not like you said about Carling Fosters. They just don't taste of anything. They're awful.
But I'm not going to say a word.
But Purus?
Yeah. So it's just a 4% German Pilsner style beer.
And you, do you have to change anything to brew a lager? Or
so lagers generally are brewed in enclosed vessels. So we're very traditional. We have open-topped fermenters. Lagers really require a closed vessel and a strain of yeast that settles to the bottom of the tank, whereas all our real ales, they're all top fermenters, so all the yeast rises to the surface.
Hence the bubbles being different.
So that's it goes through a process called lagering, hence the name lager. And then it's filtered within an inch of its life and recarbonated.
So
it's... You're really struggling to keep the disdain out of your face.
Listen, it's the same.
He's looking at me like he's just stepped in something.
That's a little unfair. More like swam in something, but that's okay. That's not a problem. No, it's the same process. It's the same four ingredients, ultimately. It's just processed slightly different at the back end.
I spent quite a bit of time in Germany, and... there's some amazing lagers.
They certainly know how to lager a lager, as it were. Yeah. It's all about flavour at the end of the day. Yeah. It's really interesting that I mentioned that my wife was an ex-police officer, but she's actually a scientist at heart, so she's now an A-level biology teacher. But one of the things I learned from her, one of the many things I've learned from her over the years, is actually there's a very scientific reason why people drink lager, and then as they get older, they start to move on to real ale.
Still waiting for you.
Well, he's not that old. No,
actually, when I first started drinking, I drank bitter. I used to drink Courage Best because my local pub was a Courage pub. But I found that if you went to a different pub and had the same beer, you often had a very different outcome.
Things were a bit ropey in the 70s, weren't they?
It was the 70s, actually.
has to be said that the standardisation across the industry has really helped and brought standards up in terms of both production and dispense at pubs.
And camera.
And camera's been a wonderful thing, really. They've sort of outgrown themselves from their original idea of trying to save real ale. They've more than done that, and they've sort of slowly moved over to trying to save pubs, which I think is exactly what they should be doing. And even our local branch, although it's only a little small branch, they certainly seem to back the local pubs. You know, they're certainly out there trying to promote them, which is absolutely what they should be doing. There's been a very big drive forward in terms of quality, both in production and dispense. So most pubs you get a decent pint these days.
Well, I switched to lager mainly because I found that it didn't matter where you went, a pint of Stella or Peroni or whatever it was, which is the same wherever you went.
That's the key to brewing, certainly successfully. It's the key to anything successfully, is consistency. You know, you've only got to look at the biggest player in the food world, in the fast food world, McDonald's, and nobody would ever say that's a quality product, because it just isn't.
They probably would.
But it's incredible. Yeah, they probably would. It's an incredibly successful business. And that's because every McDonald's you go to anywhere in the world is identical. The food's the same, the chips are the same, burgers are the same.
It's familiarity.
Quick. Absolutely.
That's the thing you...
And you know that when you go in there, you're exactly what you're going to get.
And Wetherspoons is the same. Wetherspoons is the McDonald's of pubs.
Completely.
You go into a Wetherspoons and you'll be safe. You're not going to walk into a pub and everyone's going to stop talking, you're going to get beaten up. It's McDonald's with beer.
It's consistency.
Yeah.
And you can be consistently good or consistently poor. As long as people know what they're getting when they walk through the door, you'll, generally speaking, find a market and do okay. And brewing is identical. So, you know, we try to make our recipes, our grists, our beers as simple as possible to actually produce. So you just follow the same set of instructions every time, the same recipe every time, using the same ingredients every time. Theoretically, you come out with the same product every time. It never really works like that. There's always slight differences, but, you know, the differences tend to be so minute that people can't tell.
So just going, before we interrupted you, you were talking about your wife being a biology teacher.
Yeah.
Was you about to tell us that it's genetic?
No, no. So it's an age thing, gents. I don't know. When you were young and you had orange squash, you'd have a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of orange squash and lots of water to taste the orange in it. As you get older, scientifically, they did a study on this over 30 years. As you get older, you need more and more orange squash and less water to make it taste the same. And that's because your taste buds on your tongue are the first things that start to die. And they start to die when you get to about 20. So in order to make it taste the same, you have to put more and more squash in as you get older and older and older, because specifically your sweet taste buds on your tongue are dying. And it's the same with drink. So you start off with cold fizzy lager. It's so cold you can't really taste it. If you warm that up, you get a totally different flavour. And as you get older, you find you need more and more flavour to make things taste the same. And real ale at 10 degrees is a lot more flavoursome than lager is at 3 degrees.
Sure.
And so people tend to switch to try and recreate that flavour.
Interesting. I should imagine that's got as much to do about the brain interpreting the taste as it has the taste buds as well.
There's an old saying in this industry, people eat with their eyes. And it's absolutely true. You know, you eat with your eyes and your brain and your nose and your ears, and if things look right, generally they are right.
Yeah.
Even though they might not be. And that's absolutely true. The way you interpret what you're eating and drinking changes through your life, as it does with anything else.
So, completely changing the subject. What's the best beer you've ever tasted, but that's not the question. If you were to go to a desert island and you could only take one beer, none of them being any that you can get in here, which beer would it be?
Blatant plug coming up. Purple Moose Brewery in North Wales. They produce a beer called Dark Side of the Moose. And it's very similar to our Beast in style, a little bit fruitier. It's absolutely stonking. It's my favourite beer.
So, to just say that again,
the Purple Moose Brewery.
Whereabouts in Wales is that?
Do you know, Porthmaddock.
Because you're off there next week, aren't you?
No, June. I'm going playing golf up there.
And here's a really interesting thing. I found out. So we don't actually own this building. We lease it. Totally coincidentally, the people we lease this off. Also own Porthmaddock Station, which Purple Moose Brewery have just bought as their bar. And so they actually only found that out about 3 weeks ago, that they actually own that as well and lease both to the two breweries.
You mean the train station?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could own a train station.
So they own the building. You know,
you never play Monopoly?
I should know, shouldn't I?
So I don't know whether you've ever been to Porthmaddock, but one end of the Blaenau-Ffestiniog railway, the steam railway there, and all the sort of waiting rooms and restaurants and cafes there, and the bar there, is all privately owned by the same guys that own this building.
Interesting. Do they serve it in? Do they bottle it or tin it?
They bottle. Yeah, absolutely.
So bring some back when you go.
Dark Side of the Moose.
Dark Side of the Moose. I've got a garage full of the stuff. I love it. It's I don't really drink a lot. Don't tell anybody. But I probably drink 2 pints a month. But I do like that. It's a great beer. Great beer.
That's a very, very low amount of alcohol per month.
I used to drink a lot more than that, and it's if you do anything to excess, it's never good for you, is it? I used to go through phases of 6 months of no drinking at all, and then I'd drink again. And now my wife went teetotal about 4 years ago. And being the supportive husband that I am, I joined her, and essentially I'll have a pint here and there, but not very much. Certainly not like I used to.
Yeah, no. I do extended periods of abstinence as well. Mm. Sometimes I go from Monday to Friday.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking like, occasionally at the weekend.
Yeah. The odd weekend, no, I don't have anything. I'm busy doing something else. Yeah. Marry the Lord. It's not that I don't like it. I just hit a point where I sort of, it's nice to wake up and feel alive in the morning. Because I was literally drinking 10 pints a day at one point.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
So that's way too much.
Yeah.
Well, we went to for his 60th a few months ago. We did the Monopoly Challenge.
Okay, yeah.
Which will be the subject of one of these podcasts at some point. When I had my 50th, about 3 years ago.
Oh, God.
We,
I'm still suffering from that.
We did it in a day. Oh, 26 pubs in a day, half a pint in each. But for him, we did it over, being 60, we did it over 2 days. So I had 13 pubs, half a pint in each. And I was done.
Yeah.
I think we might have had a pint in one or two of them, but probably got through to about 8 pints over 8 hours. But that was me. And
it's
the thought of drinking 13, 14 pints in a day,
it's staggering.
I could not do it now.
It's actually quite hard work, particularly if you drink real ale, because you tend to get quite bloated on it. Because it's actually getting a bit older, you tend to get a bit of gluten intolerance, you know, you can't eat so much bread and so on. And because it's packed full of gluten, ultimately it's made of barley, you tend to find you get quite bloated on it.
Yeah.
So 4 or 5 pints is usually people's max of real ale at any one time, but in an afternoon, because it just makes you feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Sort of, lager's not so bad.
So what about the future then?
Cool, blimey, yeah, interesting.
Have you got any exciting plans you want to share?
Well,
at the moment you're maxed out here, aren't you? I mean, we've got quiz nights on the first Wednesdays of the month.
Don't tell anybody else.
You didn't hear that. That was a secret. Don't tell anybody.
They didn't win last night, folks. I don't know if you can tell.
Yeah. You have comedy nights?
Yeah, we do quiz nights, comedy nights, live music. We try and...
Build a burger night on a Tuesday.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
But that's something you've got to do once every 6 months, any more than that.
We have people come in here and they'll build a burger with... 4 burgers and 5 slabs of cheese, and it's obscene, and they'll nail through it, and you just, yeah, I mean, good on them, but
it's a once every 2 or 3 months as a treat, but yeah, I don't think I could do that every week.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a different thing, you know. It's something we started doing probably about 8-9 years ago, and it's always been a successful night, because it's almost like, here's a list of ingredients, whatever you want, just shove it in and we'll make it. Yeah. And people seem to have bought into that quite nicely. It's a thing. People can rock up and they can just change whatever they want, or put in whatever they want. It's a bit like having a restaurant saying, here's 50 ingredients. You tell us what you want us to put on the plate and we'll do it.
Essentially, that's what I did tonight, really. I just got the standard burger and had extra stuff in it.
Yeah, well, similar sort of thing. But we try and do lots of different diverse things, really. Yeah. And a lot of that is driven by the fact we have such a diverse clientele.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do something for everybody.
So when does the marquee go up out the front?
When's that going up? 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, we've got a festival in 2 weeks' time, so well, at the end of the month, 3 weeks' time.
And that comes down September time, usually?
It'll go up and down. We're not actually supposed to have it up for more than about 2 months, because obviously that's a car park and we'd need planning consent if it was up for any longer than that. So it sort of comes up and down pretty much. We have 3 big festivals through the year, so it goes up and down with them. And then after the beer festival in August, it'll probably stay up through to probably October time. Keep a bit of rain off of people.
Yeah, and we've got a bit of live music as well.
Yeah, we haven't done so much of that since COVID. Food is sort of and just being a pub is trying to build that back up is taking a bit of that away. But we've certainly got a big program of that for this year that we're trying to build back in. Trying to work on one or two interesting bands that people might have actually heard of.
All right. Do you want to give some clues?
No.
What about a little clue? Not naming them.
No, can't do that.
No.
but we're certainly working.
What about the sort of, what sort of music?
No, I'm not going to give you any clues.
You've got to describe that.
I mean, no. Come on, we need an exclusive.
We've had plenty of big names in the past. We had Top Loader here a few years ago.
Yeah.
I've forgotten his name now. A very famous jazz musician that came and played here. We used to do jazz on a Sunday. And we had
nice.
lots of famous jazz musicians over the years. So, but yeah, we're sort of working on a couple of things.
Who's your favourite band that plays here?
Plays here?
Yeah. Monkey Beds?
No. Don't tell Paul. No, there's a chap who comes up from London called Sam Kelly, who is used to be Chaka Khan's drummer and Robert Plant's drummer, and he has a band called Station House, and they just turn up and rehearse. So they just turn up here without any rehearsals, six or seven musicians, or eight if he wants to bring them, and they just basically jam for 2 hours, and it's incredible. They're all high-quality musicians that are professional musicians, not just sort of people that do it and earn a few quid at the weekends singing and playing in pubs. And they're just immense. And, you know, how more people don't come up to watch them, it staggers me. You know, someone of that ilk, incredible.
Say the name again.
His name's Sam Kelly, and the band's called Station House.
Station House.
Yeah.
Are they likely to be turning up this year?
I've got to talk to them yet, but I hope so, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
They're amazing. They're amazing. And there's nothing better than live music, live comedy.
Oh, no.
And pubs and bars are the grassroots version of that, you know, in the UK. Most of the big bands that you'll have heard of have started playing in pubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And years ago, you used to have them in here.
Yep.
And to be fair, it's quite difficult to hear yourself think if you're actually in the building.
Yeah, absolutely.
But more recently, you've had them actually outside.
Yeah, so most of the time now with live music, we have it at one of our festivals, so we'll put them outside. We try to have them, you know, facing away from the town, so that most of the music goes down the railway line rather than into town. Conscious of your neighbours.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's quite difficult because, you know, like there was a whole series of concerts in the park over the last few summers, and that's been kiboshed by the town council because somebody in the town complained about the noise.
Oh,
you know, it's just a little band playing on a Sunday afternoon. It attracted loads of people. It was put on by the council for free.
Yeah.
And they can't do it this year because someone in the town complained about the noise. It's like,
Well, I guess it might have been had to be the right person that complained, I guess. But
Yeah.
But of course, we don't need anything like that in Rutland, do we? We don't need to attract people and bring no. bring money into the area.
No. What's the point of that? It's a shame, you know, because that sort of thing should be the lifeblood of a town. I mean, they play music in the bandstand. There's a clue there. Yeah. It's called a bandstand.
Yeah. Wonder why they called it that.
Agreed.
So both my sons have played there when they're
really
young. Yeah.
What do they play?
Oh, they don't now, but at the time, in fact, both of my sons were singers because they were basically quite good looking like their dad and lacked any other talent, also like their dad.
They either sing or play the drums because it's not hard to beat stuff, is it? Sorry to all the drummers out there. That's clearly not true. My wife refused to let our children learn the drums. One of them got quite talented. He was actually taught by a guy called Romeo Challenger, who's Shawaddy Waddy's drummer.
Oh, right.
And it was his drum teacher, and he got quite good at it. And then my wife said, "Well, that's not a real music. It's not a real musical instrument. So you got to stop that and learn something else."
Yeah. Tell her that's a John Bonham.
Agreed. Yeah.
Shout out to my best man who's listening, Les Arnold, great drummer.
There you go.
His brother is a composer, songwriter, famous. David Arnold.
Done some James Bond stuff.
That's right.
Film scores.
Yeah.
Mm. My brother-in-law is not quite that famous, but he's a composer and guitar tutor, graduate of the Royal College of Music. So he composed music for a couple of quite low-budget films and TV series and stuff. But yeah, he's.
You have to be pretty good to do that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. He's incredible.
So. Can you believe we're talking for an hour?
With you? No, that's not at all surprising.
You've not even finished a pint, was it?
So my advice, if you're listening to this and you don't live in Oakham or Rutland, and you're travelling from Stansted up to Birmingham or the opposite direction, you're going to be going past Oakham, get off the train, turn left, and you've got the grain store sitting there. Mm. Come and have a pint.
Which way you turn depends on which way you're going, obviously.
Yeah. Can you still get from Stansted? I thought they'd cancelled that train.
No, it's still there.
Is it? Yeah. Okay, good. Good.
So thank you very much, Peter, for your time.
Pleasure.
It's been really interesting. Time's flown by, and I've learnt lots as well.
Nice to see you both.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Cheers.
So, that's a wrap. And thank you for listening to our latest Pub Natter. If you visit timothyives.com/pubnatter, you will find photos, links, and more information about each episode. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and please subscribe to ensure you don't miss a pub or one of our amazing guests. The Pub Natter theme tune is by Tom Arnold. That was a Pub Natter broadcast.